Welcome, everyone, to We Have Issues, our weekly comic book podcast that opens the vault, feels the boom, weathers the aftershock, and marvels at every issue released this week. I'm your host, Keith, and I'm here to talk about all your favorite issues and publishers. I am finally caught up on my comics. This is coming out a week after they came out, but this next week will be on time, and I'm very excited about that. And I'm very excited to talk about comics with you guys once again. So without further ado, let's get straight into the reviews. And as always, you guys know, when we talk about comic books, we don't start with a bang. We start with a boom. Boom Studios. Got a couple of boom books this week. First of all, Grimm number 16. Of course, written by Stephanie Phillips. Illustrated by Flaviano. Color by Rico Renzi. And letter by Tom Napolitano. Checking back in with the Grimm story, I do like this. It's almost like a side story. It's almost like a realm lore issue. To give us a bit of background on a character that we've recently encountered. And I really liked it. I thought it was a really compelling story. I thought it was very emotional. I thought it really hit the tone of the books very well. And I thought it was well-timed as far as like when in the story this is occurring to kind of give us a moment to reflect, a moment to think on things. I love Grimm. It's really, really good. I'm really glad that I stuck with it because... Again, I've had to make cuts because comics are expensive, but a lot of boom books, I was like, I just can't cut it. And Grimm is one of those, and I absolutely love it, and you should too. After that is Ghost Lore 9. Oh, man. Written by Colin Bunn, illustrated by Leo Max, colored by Jason Wardy, and lettered by Ed Dukeshire. 9 issues later, we finally get this climactic reunion that we've kind of been building towards this entire time. But it comes with a lot of tragedy, unfortunately. I mean, there's a lot of character death in this issue, but it all comes down to the two main characters we've had from the beginning. And I think that's really nice. And I do think that they're going to be able to work out their differences. For those who don't remember, this is about the father and daughter who can see ghosts. And there's this oncoming, I don't want to get too much into the big plot, but there's this big oncoming possible end of the world thing going on. And they've been separated the entire series, and now it does seem at the very end of this issue, they are back together, and I really like it. It was really actually very heartwarming for me to see them back together, because they've been apart so long, and the desperation of the father was really felt throughout the series, so really, really liked it. Lots of really gruesome art in this one. Again, lots of character death, so be prepared for that, but yeah, very good. I really like Ghost Lore. It's so good. After that is my final boom book, which is Ranger Academy number 6, written by Maria Ingrande Mora, illustrated by Joe Migong, colored by Joanna Lafuente, and lettered by Ed Dukeshire. Have I told you lately that I absolutely love Ranger Academy? I love this book. I love these characters. I love the concept. It's the kind of realm that, as myself a writer in my spare time, it's the kind of realm that makes me want to get my hands on it. And get in there and write some stuff and change some stuff and develop stuff. And I just love it so much. It's a really interesting story. Again, very compelling characters. It's a side of the Rangers that we really haven't seen, but I think it's a side that is totally works and is just really worthwhile. And I never checked these things, but I hope this isn't a mini. I hope this just keeps going for a while because I really, really like it. And I expect some big stuff to happen in the next issue or so based on what's building up. So this is a good time to jump on if you haven't yet. All right, that is it for Boom Studios. So we're going to switch over to a different publisher. And in this case, we're going to bet on a dark horse. Dark Horse Comics, Time Traveler Tales, number 5. Created by Carl Jacobs, script by Dave Scheidt, art by Kelly Nicole Matthews, letters by Joe Matt Gill. I have said from the beginning, and this is going to sound repetitive to some people, that I was not aware of the source material, Tales from the SMP. I had never heard of it or anything like that. It's just usually if something looks YA friendly, I give it a shot because I really think there should be more YA comics out there. Also, I have a niece and I like to forward things over to her to read. And so I like to check them out. And this has been a real surprise book for me. It does feel like this is the end, at least of the arc. It's probably of the series is what I'm feeling, but at least of the arc, it is at the end. But yeah, it was really good. I definitely would rank it up there with some of the other YA series that I really enjoyed, like a Spectre Inspectors. I love Spectre Inspectors. And it's just really enjoyable and definitely something I'm going to be sharing with my niece. I think she'll really like it. And the fact that it does have a tie-in for a web series, she's going to love that too, because she's all about that stuff. So, yeah, big surprise book for me. Big thumbs up. Pick up the trade. Maybe we'll get more. I hope so. After that is Minor Threats, The Fastest Way Down, number one. Okay, guys. I love Minor Threats. I absolutely love it. And this is no different. I love this book so much. And I'm so happy to see it back. Quick creative team rundown. Script by Patton Oswalt and Jordan Blum. Art by Scott Hepburn. Colors by Ian Herring and letters by Nate Picos of Blambot. For those who aren't aware, Minor Threats is a burgeoning superhero universe within the Dark Horse imprint. And it is so good. It started with an original mini called Minor Threats. And that introduced us to the main character of this series, which is Playtime. One of my new favorite characters in comics over the past couple of years. I really love this character. They did a second series that focused on other characters, which I did like. I really liked it a lot, but I was really hoping we didn't see the last of Playtime. Well, she's back. And I love this. It's so cool. These incredibly kind of campy characters that she runs into sometimes. And I just can't stress enough how great it is to have another superhero universe. I'm the world's biggest X-Men defender, and I've really started to love DC in the past couple of years and really respect it a lot. But the more options for superhero comics there are out there, the better for everybody. I really think this is something special, and I'd put it up there with the Massiverse, which I also love. And having two non-Marvel or DC great superhero universes out there for us to read is amazing. And anyone who tells you that comics are suffering and that comics aren't great right now, they don't know what they're talking about. They're not reading the right books. Like, they're not reading any books, probably. They're just complaining because they can. But I love this book. It's so good. I'm a Minor Threats fan till the day I die. Keep it up. All right. Let's talk about Dynamite. Dynamite Comics. I only got the one, but of course it is Disney Villains Cruella de Vil number 3, written by Sweeney Boo. Art by Mariana Puglia, color by Ellie Wright, and letter by Jeff Eckelberry. I'm really liking how this is developing. I've said before that I really enjoyed the fact that it is a sequel to the 101 Dalmatians movie. So we can kind of explore her life after this and her attempt to recover from her shame. And it's a lot of fun. And I like how Cruella is kind of perpetually unlucky, but also not repentant at all on what she did. So she doesn't really deserve to be lucky. She doesn't really deserve that second chance unless she's going to turn it around. She's met an unlikely benefactor with a very alarming name. I think I have an idea where it's going based on that name, but I really like it. I thought the book is a lot of fun. I love the art. The art is really unique compared to the other Disney Villains books. And just the angular features of Cruella is just so well done. This issue also brings back Horace and Jasper, which I love because I love Horace and Jasper, mostly because the guy that plays Jasper in the Cruella movie is hot. And so I just pretend that's him. So very cool. Definitely worth a check out. If you're a Disney fan, if you're not, whatever, just pick it up. I don't think you'll regret it. All right, next up is IDW. I only got the one book this week, but what a book. D&D Ravenloft, Caravan of Curses. So there's a huge creative team list here. I'm hoping all the Twitter tags will be able to be fit on one tweet. So if not, just know I had to trim. Written by Amy Chase and Casey Gilley. Art by Sylvia Califano, Eric Donovan, Jose Jaro, and Sarah Stern. Colors by Adam Guzowski, Chris Peter, and Valentina Pinto. Lettering by Ann World Design, Becca Carey, Jeff Eckelberry, and Jody Troutman. So this is a one-shot, but very thick anthology set in the world of Ravenloft and Dungeons & Dragons. Those who don't know, this is very dependent on gothic horror, horror monsters, very few happy endings in Ravenloft, if you will. And I think this book is such a good introduction. I really loved the last Ravenloft mini that we got last year. It was really good, but this one blew me away. I really enjoy it. And especially because my current team is going, my current group is going through, we just got out of Ravenloft actually, but now we're going to the Feywild campaign, which is a circus. And so it kind of ties in both of those with really nicely. That's the campaign that I'm playing in, not the one I'm DMing in, of course. But it's really good. It's definitely an anthology where everything's tied together in a really cool way. So I'm not going to spoil it for you, but it is based around a bunch of people who are cursed for different reasons and different ways, and how they have to handle it, how they have to get rid of it, all going to one source, maybe to try to get it removed. I loved it. Really just interesting, fascinating stories, and just seeing these holes that people got themselves in, and how it's just, it's very Ravenloft. Nailed the theme. If you like Ravenloft, this is the perfect Ravenloft book. Excellent theming. Really like it. And without leaning on stuff like Strahd. Strahd's not even mentioned. Like, I really think that's cool to be able to do that. So, big recommendation from me. And next up is Image Comics. I have a couple Image books this week. First of all, The Last Mermaid, number 2. This one, of course, everything is done. Story and art by Derek Kirk Kim. This is the unusual size one with the mermaid running around the mech suit and the axolotl. I think I pronounced that correctly. In this post-apocalyptic universe where they're trying to just find enough water to survive. And it does seem like she has found a refuge. Honestly, if you pick up this book on the shelf, you will. The first thing you'll see is, oh God, the art's amazing. And it is. That's the thing that'll jump at you. But I do like the story quite a bit too. I think it's really interesting. It draws you in. Very likable protagonist. Also, I have to give props for the cover design on this one, because if you look at the front cover, it's her little pet and he's super cute. But if you look at the back, it kind of spoils what's going to happen later in this issue. But if you don't look at the back first, but you read the issue and then you see the back, it just unravels in this amazing way. I really liked that. Very cool book. It is unusually sized, so you're not going to be able to fit into a normal comic book box, but I think we all have a box that's just all these generic size ones. So very, very cool. Really enjoying. Next up is The One Hand, number 3. This one is written by Rom V, art by Lawrence Campbell, color by Lee Luffridge, and letter by Aditya Bidikar. Continuing this murder mystery from the two perspectives, The One Hand is following this nearly retired detective as he's attempting to solve a mystery he thought he had already solved. I really enjoy this. I think that this character is so deliciously flawed. And sometimes when you have a cop movie, the character, when they make mistakes, you're like, you idiot. Like, why would you do that? That's dumb. In this one, no, I get his motivations. I get where his anger is from. I get where his emotions are coming from. I get why he makes his mistakes. So it makes him a really compelling character that I can still care about without looking down on. Very interesting. And I love now that we know that there's the two sides of the story. I can't wait for issue 3 of the other book, because I want to see what he did in this part, because it's definitely going to be interesting. But very good. Very, very cool. After that is Love Everlasting 14. Oh, man. Written by Tom King, art by Elsa Charretier, colored by Matt Hollingsworth, and letter by Clayton Cowles. This book has taken so many turns since the beginning, and I've enjoyed every mile on the road, if you will. I think it's so creative and so interesting. And with Elsa's just unique art, it really sells this book. And if you're not paying attention, it just looks like a romance anthology at first. But now we're at the point where all that, you know, disguise of romance and stuff is off. Now we have this mind-bending thriller, and now we're coming at it from different characters' points of view. I love this book. I'm giddy with anticipation to see where it's going to go, because it's been so good so far that I have no idea what they're going to do. And that's a great feeling. So very cool. After that is The Sacrificers, number 7. We went a little while without a Sacrificers issue, but it is back. This one, of course, is created by Rick Remender and Max Fiamara. and with Dave McCaig. I don't see the credits here. Oh yeah, that's right. It's like a third of the way in. I want to make sure I get everybody. But yeah, oh, Russ Wooten doing the lettering. There we go. Kind of in the aftermath of what was essentially the first arc, we are seeing one of the main characters. And again, I don't want to spoil because this is the kind of book you don't really want to spoil anybody. But one of the characters in the aftermath of what happened to them, trying to recover. And it's just really interesting because of the morality of this world is so twisted that the person who decided to do the right thing is kind of punished for it. And that's what impact that's going to have later on is going to be really interesting. I also like that we got to dive into her past a bit. I thought that was a really cool and I think really timely thing to do to make us care a bit more about her and who she is and why she, how she came, where she from, where she is, specifically the interaction each of her parents has with her. Very cool. Something I've really enjoyed. Definitely great. It's really grim, but really cool. Next up is Void Rivals, number 8. This is the only Energon book this week, I believe. Yes, it is. This one is written by Robert Kirkman, art by Lorenzo De Felici, color by Patricio Del Pech, and letter by Russ Wooten. With our two, I don't want to call them star-crossed lovers. I don't know if that's going to even be the relationship, but these two people bound to fate by the fact that they are different, but also the only two that are the same in a certain way, trying to cross this wasteland, and they are tracked down by a deadly killer. And there are some hints thrown out there to give you an idea of who this might be. Very interesting. And I'm wondering if that's a red herring or is that like actual foreshadowing, but it's a pretty violent confrontation that doesn't end great for our heroes. So we are left on a bit of a cliffhanger, but I've really enjoyed this. I love that this was the first of the Energon books, this new idea. And I do like that it's not really tying directly into any of the other books right now. It's doing its own thing. And I'll be very curious when it does, but I've really enjoyed it. Big thumbs up for me. Next up is Crave, number 5. Story and art by Maria Lovett. Logo design by Jesus Orellana and letter and design by Maria Lovett as well. With the reality and the truth of Crave, these kids have determined that this app, Crave, which is helping them fulfill all their desires, is really just a very sophisticated way of harvesting all their information. And they're determined to take it down from the inside. And I really like that. I think that's really cool. And it's like we see it kind of go into action here, but something else is working behind the scenes as well. And I'm wondering if we're going to see more about who directly is in control of Crave or if Crave is controlling itself at this point. Because Crave definitely seems to want to defend itself. And I think that's very interesting. And with a Maria Lovett story, you'll never know. It could go anywhere. And it's wonderful. So big thumbs up. I think there's only one issue left. So we'll talk about more then. All right. And finally, last Image book and my book of the week, Deep Cuts, number 6. Written by Kyle Higgins and Joe Clark. Penciled and inked by Toby Cypress. Colored by Igor Monti. And a letter by Hassan Atsmani Alahau. Deep Cuts was unlike any comic I've read in a long time. It was very much a realistic story. It's very biographical. It focuses on the music industry, specifically a lot of jazz. And it's told in a way that I really enjoyed, but did not fully appreciate till I got this issue. And the reason for that is the first 5 issues were these individual stories that did slightly reference each other, maybe in different points of time, but really they were individual stories about different people in the music industry and what they did. And then we got this issue. And the core of this story is about a band falling apart, but it's a band that probably needs to fall apart. You know, like, for the sake of their relationships, the band needs to end. And then the question is, what do we do after this? What am I going to do? Each individual one has to ask themselves that. And I really like it. And it ends up tying in all 5 other issues in a way that I was so satisfied with when I read it. It made me feel like I've been on a journey. It made me feel like I was with them. It made me feel a sense of accomplishment. Like I could sense I could sense the message that the creators, Kyle and Joe, were trying to get across, what they're trying to tell us. And it's not just about the beauty of music. It's also about, even if you think you've left a tiny impact on the world, you don't know how far down the road it's gonna change, how much you're going to impact, how many people are going to depend on the one little thing you might have done. Maybe it's something you just did because you were good at it and you made decent money, but it could completely change the music industry one day. It completely inspire a whole nother generation who then on their end will inspire another generation. That's the core of music. That's what makes music amazing, is that the way it can inspire people and the way that music is a living organism that has continued to grow since humanity's invented it, and it's still growing, and people still are influenced by people from hundreds of years ago as much as they are about Taylor Swift. You know, like, I really love this book. Obviously I have a music podcast, so I am partial to music. But man, it got me. And there is a tiny tease. It does say at the end, because I was like, you know what, that might be the end, but you know, maybe that's good. Maybe it could end there. I'm okay with that. The last page does say end of side A. And if we get another one of these, I am 100% here for it and will be first in line to pick it up. So please pick up Deep Cuts. I promise you, you'll really enjoy it. It'll be a gorgeous trade. All right, let's switch up publishers now. Let's talk about the big two, DC. Blue Beetle number 8. This is coming out of the big arc where Jaime lost control of the Beetle, and basically it ended up killing someone. So now he's really hesitant to use it. And also the other Beetles are kind of hesitant now. Specifically, one of them doesn't really feel like she should be a hero. Written by Josh Trujillo, art by Adrian Gutierrez, color by Will Quintana, and letter by Lucas Gattoni. After the break of the last issue with Ted Kord and Booster Gold, which was a lot of fun, I'm glad to come back. I'm glad to come back to these characters. I'm glad to come back to the rising thought or rising threat of Victoria Kord. And I love this. I think everybody's motivations are on point. I think people can be a little bit selfish, but are allowed to be. And I think that's justified. And just overall, a really enjoyable story. I have loved everything that this creative team has done with this character all the way back to the beginning of Graduation Day. I think that Jaime deserves a series, and they're really killing it. This is a great character. I do hope that we do see some more coordination in the future, with Jaime being maybe in some other books, like some team ups. Let's put him on the Titans. Why not? You know, like that kind of thing. But for now, this book is really, really great. I should also mention, I love the art. I love the art of this book. It's really kinetic. It's really frenetic. It's very energy filled. There's a lot going on. And there's so much like Sentai inspired armor art that I just know Josue would love. So very cool. Pick it up. Very, very much enjoying it. After that is Shazam 10. This one is a lot of fun. I've actually really been enjoying the Shazam series. Not a big fan of Billy. I've never really been a big fan of Billy, but Mary Marvel's one of my favorite DC characters, probably top five. But written by Josie Campbell, art by Emanuela Lupacino and Mike Norton, color by Trish Mulvihill, and letter by Troy Pateri. Obviously, in the last arc, the house was destroyed, but they were able to convince the gods to rebuild it for them. And it does come with a few loopholes, and I think that's kind of interesting. It's a lot of fun. It's very much a family adventure. I love when we get the Shazam family adventures. And it does kind of like reveal a deeper connection specifically to each of the gods connected to Billy. And I think that's an interesting idea. I think continuing to bring them in after that first arc is a good idea. And it's a unique way to add complications. I really liked it. I thought it was really cool. And I'm in. I will continue buying this book. Very, very cool. Next up, Birds of Prey number 8. Oh, I love this. I know exactly what part of me loves this, and that's why I'm laughing. But yeah, this book was incredible. Written by Kelly Thompson. Art by Javier Pina and David Lopez. Color by Jordi Belair. And letter by Clayton Cowles. I loved this book in a very similar way to the Exterminators book from Marvel last year. Yeah, last year. Or the year before that. Oh, God, has it been that long? Anyways, it's this. The first arc was really cool. This arc is a little bit more fun. And we do get to see Sin in the field, which is really cool. But really, it's an excuse to draw all these beautiful women as badasses. Bardo just beating the shit out of people naked is so great. I love it. The thing is, I love all these characters so much. So this is kind of a perfect book for me. And just to see them beat up the beefcake, if you will, I thought it was so much fun. And it was a cool little two-issue arc to lead us into maybe a more substantial arc as we go on. I have no problem with short arcs, especially if they don't overstay their welcome and they're fun. This is just hits perfectly. I love this book. I cannot wait for the next arc. Birds of Prey, everybody should be purchasing it. Speaking of Birds of Prey, Poison Ivy 21, a former Bird of Prey herself, written by G. Willow Wilson. Art by Marcio Takara, colors by Reef Prianto, and letter by Hassan Atsmani Elhao. Wrapping up this really actually well-told origin of Pam, of Pamela Isley becoming Poison Ivy and how that occurred and what happened after, I thought was incredibly well done. It is concise. It's 3 issues, but tells you everything you need to know about Pam and how she got where she is, what her motivations are. Really interesting. The art, of course, is incredible. I remember when I first started reading DC, one of the first villains I stuck to was Jason Woodrow, the Floronic Man. He was one of the ones that I was like, the Floronic Man, that's a terrible name. And the more I read about him, the more I realized how despicable he is. I was like, oh, I hate this guy so much. And so much of this Poison Ivy run has been about, isn't Jason Woodrow the worst person on the planet? I'm like, yes, he is. So I've really enjoyed that. And just seeing Ivy, everything that Ivy went through and her motivations and the people that surrounded her and just her attempt to do what she thought was best and how it backfired and how she became something different and how it affected her mentally and emotionally is just so well done. And it really brings us to the forefront, to where we are right now as we seemingly saw Ivy die. And we'll see what's going to happen from here. But yeah, excellently done. Yeah, one of my favorite DC books. What else can you say? Next up, I don't often review graphic novels because I have to read like 50 comics a week sometimes. But if you know anything about me, you know I had to read Bad Dream, A Dreamer Story, written by Nicole Maines, art by Rai Hickman, color by Bex Glendinning, and letter by Hassan Atsmani Elhao. I am a huge... I'm not going to say I'm the biggest Dreamer fan in the world, but I will say I'm probably the biggest cis male Dreamer fan in the world. I love Dreamer. I was a late starter to the Supergirl show. I started watching season two. I power watched through season one, started watching season two. And I was like, this is surprisingly good. I was kind of worried it'd be really bad. And then it just stayed good. And then Dreamer was introduced, played by the lovely Nicole Maines, and I was like, that character, that's my character. And didn't hurt that all the interactions with Brainiac, because Brainiac is one of my favorites too. We've seen Dreamer in comics up to this point, and I've really enjoyed all of them. I think they're really fun. I'm currently reading the Suicide Squad book, which I normally wouldn't because I hate the Suicide Squad, but Dreamer's in it, so I'm gonna read it. This is such an amazing young adult flavored origin story. the mature end of young adult, I would say. But I love it. And it's such a great contrast to Galaxy the Prettiest Star. In that, and Galaxy also appears in this book. And the way that their lives kind of intertwine here, and having read Galaxy and then now reading this and just knowing where they're both coming from. And there's a big reveal in this book that I thought was really interesting that ties them together. I thought it was really good. And it's such a great way to drag both of them a little bit more into the DC mainstream. I love this book. I thought it was so good. I do not regret buying it. I did have a little interaction, not at my normal comic book store, at a secondary comic book store I go to, because my normal comic store was sold out. And I was asking for the Dreamer book. And the guy's like, I don't know that character. And I was like, it's from the Supergirl show. And he's, you know, it's a newer character. And he goes, oh, you mean the Legionnaire? And I'm like, no, that's a different character. He's like, no, see. And then he proceeded to mansplain to me that they're the same race. And I'm like, I know, I'm fully aware. I read 50 comics a week, sir. I'm well aware. I this is a new character. I was correct. Like, and so I bought the book and I was like, but yeah, other than that, I just had to share that because it's very funny. I love weird interactions at comic book stores, which is, you know, a good thing for me because I'm a guy. My weird interactions are like that, not threatening, unfortunately, or fortunately. So back to the book. I love the book. I thought it was really cool. I thought the use of Galaxy and her supporting cast with Dreamer supporting cast is really well done. I thought the feeling of family, the feeling of a family with problems was really excellently told, told with a lot of heart. I think one of the best, I guess you'd say conflict hooks in DC Comics is Dreamer getting the powers that everyone assumed her sister would receive. And the jealousy of the sister leading her to say things that she might not necessarily say. And I think that's really interesting. It's really interesting to confront like how you can support someone you love who's trans and you will support them to the end of the earth. And then you're just like, but, and you realize you have this unconscious bias. Like you're outwardly supporting them, but you have this secret thought in your head where like, well, but still. And I think that's so interesting to confront in this story the way it's done. And I think it's a really important story, and I really hope a lot of young people read it. I think it's an important book. And I'm definitely gonna give my niece a copy of this. Because I get her all the Teen Titans YA novels and stuff, the Kami Garcia ones, and she's going to read this one too. So, very good. Yeah, again, I don't review trades very often, but I had to do this one because it's Dreamer, and you guys know me. I love me some Dreamer, so. So that is going to be it for all the DC books. We're going to move on to the final publisher. And as you all know, we always wrap up with Marvel Comics. Not a huge stack, so let's get to this quick. Immortal Thor number 9. This one is kind of shifting over to the other side of the story that we've been currently focusing on. Written by Al Ewing, art by Ibrahim Roberson, colored by Matt Wilson, letter by Joe Sabino. Yeah, so we're going into this next kind of phase of the story of Thor, going away from these elder gods and going into what Roxxon's doing. And it is tied together, and it is leading towards this tease we've seen of the Roxxon brand Thor. Really interesting. I really like it. This also features some of my favorite Thor characters. I love Enchantress, and I love the Executioner. So just seeing them both in this was really cool and really interesting. I'm really excited to see how this all ends up tying together. I think it's going to be really cool. But yeah, really enjoying this. Very good stuff. Next up is Captain America number 8, second part of this quick two-parter, written by J. Michael Straczynski, art by Carlos Magno, colored by Espen Grunthendjern, and letter by Joe Caramagna. Just a really cool little side story that has some pretty far-reaching implications. Especially literally far reaching, as in the end of things for Captain America. There's something we find out, and I thought that was cool. I thought it was a really interesting way to do it. A really fascinating couple of characters to meet, and Cap, you know, Cap being as close to a normal human as Avengers sometimes get, but also being the one who can withstand everything, is just a really cool concept. I've always liked the idea of that this guy who's literally just a really, really strong human is kind of the last one standing, just because of his willpower. So very cool. After that is Power Pack, Into the Storm, number 4. Only one issue left. Written by Louise Simonson, art by June Brigman, inked by Roy Richardson, color by Nolan Woodard, and letter by Travis Lanham. The story, of course, is with Power Pack and Franklin and Kofi and all of them, and this new Snark Mayhem, or not Mayhem, Mayhem's the bad one, this new Snark princess that Kofi has befriended. And Mayhem, this evil Snark princess, is trying to, you know, get her yacht back, first of all, but also, like, trying to take the powers, try to get enough power to actually challenge for the Snark throne. And I really like it, especially the realization of, yeah, like, the powers, kids have great powers, that'd be great, and Kofi can teleport, that's really cool, but Franklin's right there. Franklin has untapped potential, insane amounts of untapped potential. So very cool. I love this, again, this journey back to my childhood. Power Pack's one of my favorite books, always has been. I love it. And yeah, only one issue left, but I hope this isn't the only one we get. After that is Doctor Strange, number 14, yet another two-part story, wrapping up, written by Jed McKay, art by Pascal Ferry, colored by Heather Moore, and letter by Corey Petit. With Doctor Strange and his new defenders, consisting of Black Cat, Taskmaster, and Hunter's Moon, going into this D&D-like game. I loved it. It flashed me back to Die, which I loved that book, but yeah, just fun. I love Jed with Taskmaster, because Taskmaster is like my favorite villain in all of Marvel. And just to have someone who understands him and has fun with him is really cool. And yeah, really well told story. Traditional villain with Mordo. And also kind of helping tie up the last arc a little bit with the ending. So very, very cool. Which also leads to a really cool tease with Mordo at the end about coming us back to bats, which I think is really cool. Also, Strange being like, where's my dog? I think was a really great touch, because I was like, your dog's missing. Where are you, sir? So very cool. Speaking of Hunter's Moon, Vengeance of the Moon Knight, number 4, written by Jed McKay, art by Alessandro Capuccio, colored by Rochelle Rosenberg, and letter by Corey Petit. In this this saga of all the members of the Midnight Mission going through this grief process, we come to Hunter's Moon, who had such a complicated relationship with Moon Knight. They were brothers, but he also did not like Moon Knight for a long portion of their relationship. Didn't felt he took it seriously enough, didn't think he approached it appropriately. And we get to kind of see that in the play. And I'm like, maybe I read into it a little too much, but maybe that tension between them has led Hunter's Moon to overcompensate, to defend his brother in a way that he didn't defend him from himself, which I think is very interesting. Very cool. We also get the big reveal of who this new mysterious Moon Knight is, and really good reveal. I thought it was pretty cool. I'm very curious to see what's going to happen there. And is this the end for Moon Knight? Is Mark or Steven or any of the others coming back? I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, very, very cool. No spoilers. Read it for yourself. Sensational She-Hulk, number 7, written by Rainbow Rowell, art by Iguara, color by D. Cunniff, and letter by Joe Caramagna. With Jen and Scott on a vacation, or Jack, I should say, on a vacation, they seems like it's just going to be a nice, relaxing, fun story, but suddenly an ex rears their ugly head, and this time it's not Jen's, so that's really cool. I like the story. It is developing the Jack of Hearts character, and a lot of people who read She-Hulk might not know too much about him beyond maybe, oh, Avengers Disassembled. But it's a really interesting character, so it's really cool to see this kind of get developed out and dig into his history. And I thought it was really a lot of fun, and it does lead to a natural conclusion where we're gonna have a big fight. But even if she wins the fight, what really is left for Jen? What are they going to do next? I don't know. It's a pretty big emotional moment, so we'll see. After that is my only Spidey book of the week, which is Venom 32, Symbiosis Necrosis Part 3. I mentioned that I'm not getting the Carnage books just because I can't afford to buy another comic book at this point. Written by Al Ewing, art by Ken Lashley, color by Romulo Fardo Jr., letter by Clayton Cowles. But I did catch up with it. I was able to read a copy in the store just so I know what's going on for this one. And yeah, Carnage basically goes and crashes the Garden of Time and starts wiping out these alternate Eddies. And we've had so much stability with this Garden of Time being like this thing that is going to be there. And he will always come back to it. And now that we broke the pattern to immediately have Carnage just trash the place, it's really interesting. And there's some pretty long lasting implications of what's going to happen with Carnage and what impact this has on Venom going forward. I'm very curious to see how this impacts the series itself as we go on, but very good stuff. Next up is Deadpool number one. This one is written by Cody Ziegler, art by Roger Antonio, color by Guru FX, and letter by Joe Sabino. So new Deadpool series. I will say I really loved the last series. As I start the series, I'm immediately, and I will say this is a personal disappointment, because simply Deadpool's been dumped by Valentine. I love Valentine Vuong, great character, adorable, and immediately I was like, ah, but then the story is about him being dumped, and that's a really cool way to do it. It's about Deadpool trying to adjust to it, Deadpool trying to emotionally deal with it, in a self-destructive way. And I think that's really cool. Still retaining the touch of the princess, the symbiote dog, which I thought was really fun. And yeah, just a great fun ride. Cody's a really great choice for Deadpool. No complaints. I'm on board. After that is Avengers 12. Finally, the Avengers join the fight against Orcus, written by Jed McKay, art by Francesco Mortarino, colored by Federico Blee, and letter by Corey Petit. I love this because they start off, it was really smart to have it start off with Iron Man being like, yo, I know I told you guys to hold back on Orcus until the right time. I'm like, good. Thank you for explaining where they've been, like immediately. And he's like, but now it's time. And just to see the immediate impact a powerful group like the Avengers can have is really cool. Just to see them wreck Orcus and just do so much damage, I thought was awesome. And we're coming to the head with this Orcus conflict. I'm really excited to see where it's going to go. And where the X-Men go after this. I think every comic fan who's remotely interested in X-Men is staring at those new titles and wondering, where are we going? And very, very cool. Speaking of X-Men, final book, X-Men 33. Okay, here we go. I'm dreading the end of the Krakoan era, guys. But that's just me. Written by Gary Duggan, art by Joshua Cassaro, colored by Romulo Farrar Jr., and letter by Clayton Cowles. We do get to check in with a character that I think was really cool, because he basically got brought back and then just ignored, which is Shinobi Shaw, and how Sebastian thinks he just has control of his son. I got him under my control, when he does not at all. Shinobi's his own dude and always has been. Shaw's always been a little arrogant about that. So I thought that was really well told. And I just love how, again, we're featuring the X-Men fighting back, X-Men hitting back, doing the right thing, going on the offensive. I also love the fact that this book brings Doom's X-Men into play. I think that's really cool. I think that introducing these characters, bringing them in, having them, you know, ostensibly answering to Doom, so they're not straight up heroes, as you would assume, but they're still really cool. I think it's very interesting. Big thumbs up. Really enjoying this. Again, staring at the end of the Krakoan era, but it's X-Men. I've always loved X-Men. I'm always going to love X-Men. So here's for the next adventure. And that is it. Nice short episode. I haven't had a short episode in a while because I keep getting sick. But those are the issues that we had this week. Make sure to check us out on Twitter. You can find me at WHI Podcast Keith. You can find producer Liz at WHI Podcast Liz. And you can find Josue at Josue Reads Josue. You can also find the show at WHI Podcast. That is the best place to keep up with what we are doing. You get an announcement every time a new episode comes out with a link to the episode, a list of every issue reviewed, and timestamps for each publisher. So it's the easiest way to hear what you want to hear. Check out our other show, Jukebox Vertigo, at Jukebox Vertigo on Twitter. That is our musical show where we discuss different musical topics together. have a good time, build a little playlist at the end to make sure that we give you an example of what we're talking about and what we really feel is the best of each of these. We are currently working on a new episode about guilty pleasures. It's been a long time coming. I got sick, and then my co-host Amanda got sick. So we are just both recovering at different times. As soon as we're both well, we'll get an episode out for you guys. But once again, at Jukebox Vertigo on Twitter. And follow Certain POV, our network. You can find them at Certain POV Media on Twitter or at certainpov.com. You might find your next favorite podcast on there. Trust me, I did several times over. So make sure to follow them. Great people. I love them all. And I love every show. It's just really great. And you might find, and you'd be surprised. There's some crazy, really niche shows on there that I love. So once again, Certain POV Media on Twitter and certainpov.com. And for God's sakes, join the Discord. If you join the Discord, you'll meet up with a bunch of friendly nerds who will be more than happy to talk about anything with you. We have somebody for everything, I promise. Don't forget to bag, board, and box your new treasures, and we'll see you next week at the new batch of beautiful books. Stay safe and read more comics.
Hey.
Oh, hey, Jeff.
What's going on, guys?
Oh, you know, talking about Superman.
Oh, cool. I could talk about Superman.
I could talk some more about Superman.
We know.
I'll bet a few people would want to get in on this.
I'm down.
You know it.
That sounds like fun. I'll do it.
Cool. Let's do it. We can call the show Men of Steel.
And you can find it at certainpov.com.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yay.